This is Just Talking It Up with Janet and Crash.
Welcome back to Just Talking It Up. I'm Janet. I'm here with my co-host, Crash. How are you, Crash? Have you had a good holiday season?
Doing well, Janet. Welcome to 2013.
That's right.
Kicking and screaming into 2013, but here we are.
We're here. Some people aren't. That's a good thing. Not that they're not here, but that we are here. So, we're glad our listeners are here. So, there's an awful lot going on in this world, and I know it's changing just before our eyes. So, but you know, I have to tell you, I've taken kind of a backseat to everything. I don't want to be such a naysayer, but I'm telling you, when you look at how much is going on in our finances and all of the stuff that's happening government-wise, I look at 2013 as, well, another year for us to keep on not giving up. And it just, there's not a whole lot of excitement there on the political scene. It's kind of scary.
Well, I don't think there's a lot of excitement. As a matter of fact, there's been a lot of consternation, and I, for one, have been very much constrained, I guess you would say, about what has happened over the past year or more recently the last couple of months. But I think there's clarity. I think there's a very clear message that the election sent. There's a very clear message that the administration is sending. There's a very clear direction to the economic situation. So if clarity was what we were looking for, we have it. But I don't think that the clarity that we wanted is what we got.
Yeah, a fire is pretty clear, but you know, you can see that clearly. But
very well put. Very well put, because I think that's exactly what we do have. I do get very frustrated at the comments from the president when he says, hey, look, this is what I ran on, and this is what people elected me on, and this is what you're going to get. Well, if you are elected on somebody saying, I want you to go out and take as much money as you can from other people, who's not going to vote for that? That's exactly what the election showed, and that's exactly the direction that we're heading. Clarity is that we are, if we're not already, we're becoming a socialist nation. And this 4 years is going to take us even further down that socialist path.
But why would you even struggle? There, you cannot put this smoke back in the bottle.
No, you don't have to struggle right now, because I agree with you. I think it's very clear. I think we have to simply sit back, because, and sit back may not be exactly the right thing to say, but kicking against the goads, so to speak, as the Bible says, is a little bit foolish at this point, because this is the direction we're heading. And the electorate has said, I do want you to take from somebody else, and I want you to keep giving to me. Romney was right about the 47%. He was wrong about the size, probably, because it is a larger group of people, probably, and it's probably going to be continue to grow. But that's what they're saying. I want you to take from somebody else and give to me. And if that is the case, then there is, I believe, only one way out of this, and it means that we have to hit bottom. And hitting bottom, I believe, is going to be, whether it is a spiritual bottom or an economic bottom, I do think that an economic bottom is in our future.
But that's going to, you're talking about revolution.
Well, I think revolution or certain parts of a revolution, or at least unrest. I don't know how far that unrest will go, but we're going to have economic difficulties that are going to be severe. We have a national debt of $16.43 trillion, and it is headed toward $20 trillion as sure as we're sitting here.
Okay, now, explain. Help me understand in layman's terms, and for anybody who doesn't get a clear, simple 4-year-old picture of it, because that's, pretend I'm four, and you got to make it clear to me. What is national debt? What difference does it make to me, Jane Doe, if I own my house, I'm making my house payments on time, we have children in, I don't, but we have children in public school, we have all these, that we're just living in our community. So what difference does it make if the people in Washington are in debt for $17 trillion.
Well,
how's it going to hurt me?
It's not people in Washington that are in debt. It's you and I. You owe $50,000. Your husband owes $50,000. Each of your children owe $50,000. And if you've got that kind of debt and it has to be paid off in some way, or it has to be continued, you've got it. You're at the bank. You owe $50,000. They come to you and say you owe $50,000, and because interest rates are where they are, we charge you 3% interest. You say, okay, I can handle that. But what if interest rates change and go back to some normalized value of 6 to 7%? Now all of a sudden you're paying more on servicing that debt, and the bank is going to eventually say, you know, you've got to you're going to have to pay some of this off. And you say, well, I can't. It's getting bigger, but you know, I don't care how big it gets, as long as I don't have to pay it off, it doesn't matter. Well, that's what we're betting on. We're betting that we don't have to pay it off, and we're betting that interest rates are going to stay low. And so we're betting that that person who loans us money is going to continue to loan us money at that interest rate. And that's just not the case. If we owe $50,000 and every year we are increasing that debt because we have a deficit of in our budget, then that's going to get bigger and bigger. And at some point in time, somebody's not going to loan to us. And especially if interest rates do rise to a normalized value, we're in real trouble. So,
well, if I'm Jane Doe and I'm living out here where I look at my credit card statement and I make the minimum payment every month, whatever that would be, and I'm staying on time with those, but I'm carrying this, it's dragging a large debt behind it. Does it mean that I can't go to the grocery store after April 15th? Or how much is it going to change? Can they come back and ask every person for that $50,000 right at once? Because that's what I think America has done. We're like, so what? I got a soccer game I got to get my kids to. I'll talk to you later about it.
I think that's exactly my point. And until there is some sort of economic collapse or problem that hits everybody, it's going to continue the same way. Because if you listen to Obama, if you listen to the argument between he and Boehner, if you listen to what all the Democrats and Republicans say about how much we owe and whose fault this is, you say, what the heck? This goes on and on and on and on. It never reaches some sort of conclusion. Well, there's going to be a conclusion at some point in time. And when that comes, it's going to be severe, it's going to be drastic, and it's going to be quick. It's not going to take a long time. It's going to almost be overnight when that hits.
So we're going to fall like overripened fruit into their hands, aren't we?
Well, it's going to come about. I don't know. Now, one of the only ways out of a massive debt situation, you can compare this to a house. Over the years, you've been able to buy a house, and the longer you kept it, the cheaper that house became, because what you made as a monthly payment was an increasingly smaller amount of your total income. Therefore, your house payment was inconsequential as it related to your total expenditures. And so you felt like that your house was one of your great investments. A house basically has not kept up with inflation on balance over the years. And so that has not been a great inflation hedge. You obviously have been able to probably sell that house and trade it for a newer house and use that capital to apply to the newer house. But you'd been better off if you invested in the S&P 500, for example. Well, now what happened was that we hit a point when housing began to drop. And so as people owed more and more money on their house, then when that housing price began to drop, they got underwater. Now over 50% of the people in the U.S. who have debt on their house are underwater. The house is worth less than what they owe on it. And so this is one of the problems that we face. And so we don't have inflation that's helping us out of this. If you owe $16 trillion and you have nominal inflation, you, over a period of time, can pay that debt off with an amount of money that's less and less as a percentage of what your total income is. But if you have inflation that runs away, or if you have inflation that's too small, then you don't have inflation working for you. And also, that assumes that you don't add to that debt on an ongoing basis. You keep that debt constant. Well, number one, we're not keeping the debt constant. We're constantly adding to it. Number two, we don't see the kind of inflation that's going to allow us to inflate our way out of this problem. So we have unless solved, we don't have a way out of this. The other thing is you have what are called entitlements. And I guess Medicare, Medicaid, at least to some degree, are entitlements. Social Security is not an entitlement in that people have paid into the Social Security system with the expectation that they would get so much out. One of the other problems with that is that we have a changing demographic profile. People are getting older, living longer, and many are depending on Social Security more so than ever before because companies have eliminated their retirement plans and gone to a 401k plan or an IRA plan, putting people in the position of having to make their own decisions about retirement. And so if they make investments and those investments don't do well, they suffer. Under a retirement program, a company is responsible for making those decisions and making good decisions. So they will say, you work 30 years, you retire, you get $4,000 a month. Well, it's their responsibility to make sure that $4,000 is there. So they have to do the investing. But if you have a 401k or an IRA and you're looking for $4,000 a month, you have to invest properly and you have to get to the point where you can then draw out $4,000 a month. And you may or may not be able to do that. So when companies went away from guaranteed plans, so to speak, and let people make their own decisions, then the ability to create that kind of revenue stream down the road has been diminished significantly. So from every phase of our life, we're being squeezed from an economic standpoint. And it's a scary thing to look down the road and see that.
Well, so what do we normal, regular folks, how do we prepare?
Well, you have to, I was asked this question by someone over the weekend, and I wrote him a long letter and said, here is what I would say to you. One, I think you need to look at both extremes, one that we have runaway inflation and the other that we have a depression. How do you prepare for either one of those? In a runaway inflation situation, you need to have something that will keep up with inflation or runaway inflation, and that would be some sort of hard asset. If you're going to have depression, then you need to have something that's going to protect you there, and that would be dollar bills. In the middle, you have to invest in some way consistent with some normal way of investing. Bet to some degree on the growth of the American economy. And so that's playing both ends against the middle, so to speak. So I'm saying it could be runaway inflation. It could be depression.
Or how long do you think it's going to be before we'll know what it's going to what the next phase is going to be?
Well, I think if you look at what's happening today, you can sort of see the direction. The only thing that's unsure is which side of this cliff we're going to fall off on, whether it's going to be increased inflation to the point of runaway or whether it's going to be recession.
Okay, have we ever had runaway inflation before?
Well, we haven't had runaway inflation. We've had inflation. We had stagflation back in the 70s when Carter was in office. We had
What is stagflation?
Stagflation is where we have a stagnant economy and runaway inflation. So prices are going up, but the economic growth is not there. And the government today has kept interest rates very low, inordinately low. They have changed the way you look at inflation. So they say we're having no inflation, but all you have to do is go to the grocery store and see that that's not the case. So the last time, runaway inflation, the place to look at runaway inflation would be in some of the South American countries over the past 25 years. But before that, the Weimar Republic in the 20s in Germany. The old story is told about a man who took a wheelbarrow full of money to a grocery store to buy groceries during that period of time from, I guess, 21 to 24. And so the wheelbarrow wouldn't go through the door of the grocery store, so he left it outside with money in it. He came back, and the money was gone, but money was still there, but the wheelbarrow was gone. So that points up that you want to buy things that will go up in value as opposed to currency, which goes down in value. So when you hear the discussion about the strength of the dollar and the strength of hard assets, that's exactly what you're seeing. Which way is inflation going? If the dollar's stronger, then that means that inflation is, you've got some sort of balance. You want a strong dollar because it gives us the ability to have a good economy, or it's an indication of a good economy. It does make it more difficult for us to trade internationally because a stronger dollar means that we sell less to other people, and therefore the balance of trade between us and other nations is not in the direction we want it to be in. We want to be a seller of goods, not a purchaser of goods.
But now, when you're talking about hard assets, things, you know, in the Depression, people were selling brand new cars for nothing because it meant nothing to them, and it was not valuable to them. So, what is a hard asset? Are you talking about owning land or your house? Or I understand it was a wheelbarrow in the story, but what do you think we need to own outright and not owe anybody money for?
I think I've tried everything that you can and not owe anybody. Then you are more in control of your financial situation than at any other time. So, like a house, for example, I think that you either ought to owe nothing on your house or you ought to owe a lot on your house. If you nothing on your house or very little on your house, then the risk is taken by the lender. If you owe a lot on your house, If you owe a lot on your house, if you have very little equity in your house, the risk of decline is taken by the lender. If you owe very little on your house, you've got a lot of equity in your house, then you take the full amount of the risk. That's why people put down 2, 3, 4, 5%, 0% back during the late 1900s. They were able to walk away from the house. They hadn't lost anything.
Yeah.
Nothing down, you've not lost anything. So,
well, if in the past 30, 40 years, it's been smart to make lateral moves on your house. If you own your house, you live there for 10 years, and you decide to sell your house, you don't want to buy a lesser house. You want to buy either the same valuable house or the same or a larger house or one that's more valuable or something. So in this, trying to prepare and what's coming up, would it be smart for someone who owes less on their house than they own? Let's say the house is worth $100 and they owe $25 on it. Would it be smarter to sell that house and go buy a house that they can pay for outright, or build a house that they know they can completely pay for?
Well, let's look at the two sides of it. Number one, I think it's best to be out of debt, personally. So that would mean if you can downsize, if you can get enough money out of your house to pay off whatever you buy someplace else, then that would be, in general, a smart move. Obviously, real estate is dependent upon location, location, location. So you got to bring into account other issues. But just looking at the money side of it, that's exactly the way that I would go. One of the problems today is that if you want to buy a new house, you can't sell your house for what you think it's worth.
Right.
So go buy another house because you're selling it for less money and buying a house that's less money. So it's harder to make necessarily a lateral move. It's almost impossible to make anything other than lateral moves, because if your house is down in value, then other houses are down in value also, unless you're in a bad area where you've made a bad investment from a location standpoint. Then all bets are off, because you do have a seesaw relationship between cost and value there. But if you're assuming that you're looking at the same risk level house, then lateral moves are about all you can make unless you put more money or take out more money.
Well, now selling a house and building a house that you can pay for outright would have been smart, really smart, 10 years ago, huh?
Well, I don't know that it would have been. I don't know that 10 years ago would have made any difference. I think.
I'm picking a 10-year ago mark and in general when the real estate market was flourishing and houses were selling at a top dollar
Think about this. If you had built a house 10 years ago when things were selling at top dollar, you would have paid top dollar to build it. So very quickly, over the next 10 years, your house that you paid $100,000 for is now no longer worth $100,000. But if you went out to build that same house today, it would probably cost you $100,000 to build it because the materials would cost the same and the construction would cost the same. But somebody else has taken the risk of ownership. The risk is turned against them, and you therefore can take advantage of that because it is now worth less on the market already built than it would be to build it. Very unusual situation that we have ourselves in.
Well, so back to the same thing. So what is someone who's just Joe Average do to try to prepare for one way or the other? Just owe people less money, pay off your bills, and stop buying things on credit. Our family just don't live on credit cards. There's not a chance. We haven't any of our married life, and we're not going to start now. We really don't have any of the smaller debt. I have lots of friends that have department store debt, and that just blows my mind. I don't understand that, but.
About Christmas, and I think there are a lot of people that go out and use a credit card to have a great Christmas because they don't want their kids to do without. Well, I think kids need to understand what economic situation we're in and what a family is in, and if the family needs to do without, they need to understand why, and maybe they'll make some different decisions. But I agree with you in general about credit card debt. Now, I do use a credit card because I believe used properly, a credit card allows you to use somebody else's money. I happen to pay it off every month and have for 30 some odd years. I never owe a penny on a credit card beyond 1 month. And so I'll use their float as opposed to my own. And I always get a credit card that will give me 2% back. So when I make a charge, I'm getting 2% back on that charge. So I get the float and I get some money back. I believe if you can do that, credit cards can be a very valuable tool. But in general, if you pay, number one, if you don't pay it off every month, let's say this. The first month you don't pay it off, you need to slap yourself in the face and say, gosh, you can't do that again. Second month that you don't pay it off, you need to cut it up because you're now going down the path that our country's going down, increasing debt all the time, saying I'll pay it off later, 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 later. That's exactly why, as a nation, we've been willing to get ourselves into this kind of problem. The other thing is, if someone has a credit card and you only pay the minimum, you will never, ever pay that off because the minimum payment is always less than the interest rate that you're paying on that credit card. Therefore, the total debt is always increasing, even if you don't make any additional charges. So that is a one-way ticket to the debt house.
Well, we're already in the debt house. So the Democrats are going to try to raise the debt ceiling, right? How much we can go into debt, correct?
And they're going to say that, well, we've already made these commitments. We've got to pay them off. Now, that's a stupid argument. But this country has listened to many, many stupid arguments over the past couple of years. And we're going to continue to listen to the stupid arguments until the wall hits us. And I believe that with all of my being. That's exactly where we are going. And because people have said, this is what I want. Keep giving it to me. Take it from somebody else. Give it to me. I'm not going to worry about this debt. It doesn't mean anything to me. It's something in Washington. $16 trillion, it's just a number on paper. Interest rates, doesn't mean anything to me. And when you get to that point, you're in serious, serious trouble.
So what are people going to notice first about some of the recent laws that are just recent stuff that has just changed? Are we going to see differences in our, if we're making, let's just say average Joe is making $60,000-$70,000 in their house a year. So what are they going to see, a tax increase?
First thing you're going to see is your paycheck's going to be smaller. By difference between 6.2% and 4.2%, which was the amount that was taken out for FICA. FICA, the employee pays 6.2%, the employer pays 6.2%. A few years ago, they reduced the 6.2 that the employee pays to 4.2. So 2% of your gross income will be added to your tax bill. You will pay you will get 2% less every month right now. Second thing is, Obamacare is beginning to kick in. Now, you don't get any benefit from Obamacare until 2014, but you have to pay more and more in for Obamacare already. The other thing, if you're having to pay part of your insurance bill, then you will begin to pay more and more, because it's said that virtually every insurance plan will go up double digits in cost in 2013. If you have contributions that you make, you will get less of a deduction for that contribution in future years. Some years ago, see, there's a misnomer that tax rates haven't gone up. But it used to be, if you gave money, as I know you and I do, to charitable and Christian organizations, you were able to deduct that from your adjusted gross income. It was deducted from your income to get to the adjusted gross income. Well, they changed that law some few years ago, where the first 3% of what you give is not deductible. So that means that there was a hidden increase in your taxes because you didn't get credit for that deduction. That's where they're going after it. They're going to eliminate some of the deductions. See, we tried, the Republicans tried to trade off deductions for increase in tax rate. Well, what they got was they made some settlement on tax rate, feeling like that they got some. Well, now the next thing is going to happen is that they're going to go after deductions. So they're going to get not only increase in tax rates, but they're going to get elimination or decrease in the deductions from your gross income. So they're going to get it, and we're getting squeezed. We're going to be getting squeezed in the middle. If you sell a house on a go-forward basis, 3.5% of that money goes in taxes of that sale price. So it is insidious, the small things that are happening. We're going to see continued increases in the taxes that we pay. There's just absolutely no doubt about that. As a small business owner, one of the problems I think that was made by Romney, he talked to the small business owner and saying that the small business owner was the one who created jobs mostly, and I think that's correct. What he didn't talk to was the person who is employed by the small business owner. They continued to say, well, that's okay, that's all right, take care of the small business owner, but hey, it's me that I'm worried about. And so he never, yeah.
Well, the one thing I was asking you earlier about the ways that it's going to affect John Doe or the average guy is that in the last week we were doing a couple of repairs at the farm. We had the wrong size something or other, and I had to go to the local hardware store. Well, that hardware store, it's a True Value hardware store. It's been there for 40 years as far as I know. And I drove up, it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, doors were closed, the space is for lease, all of their stuff is still in the store, but they're closed, they are out of business, and they shut their doors quick, And I know the neighborhood is very sorry to see them go. Some of those little small farmers have depended on them forever for, you know, just to pick up a nut or a bolt or whatever. So I know that there are small businesses that are, rather than fight the fight, have decided to just bolt the doors and leave with what they can.
See board. Now, I think that's a good example. Ace Hardware, if you go in there and buy something versus going to Home Depot, you'll pay significantly more. You probably pay 20 to 100% more for that item in Ace Hardware than you would at Home Depot. Why do you go to Ace Hardware? Because if I've got a small thing and I need it quickly, I can go in there. They're all over you in terms of helping you and get it. You get it and get out. Whereas going to Home Depot, you may have to drive 5 miles and stand in line, wade through, and what have you. That's why Ace Hardware stayed in business. But as people significantly more discriminating, they will say, well, I'll either do without it or I'll wait 3 days till I'm going to be going in that direction, and I will then go to Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever. And so that hardware store, Ace Hardware, is getting squeezed. Every small business that I know is getting squeezed in this manner, increasing cost on an expense side, whether it be salaries or what have you. Let's take, for example, my business. I have a small business, and I know we're out of time. Let me take 60 seconds. We'll maybe take this into another show. But instead of hiring an additional person, as I would need to do, I go to the Philippines or to India and have coding done there. I check it when it comes back. So I don't have to pay additional Medicare. I don't have to pay an additional salary. I don't have anybody that I have to fire. I don't pay FICA. That's my way of controlling my expenses. And many, many businesses are doing that. Might be good for us to talk about this further. There's a lot of stuff that's out there that I think people need to be aware of. So,
yeah. I think we need to know. But the one thing that I'm coming away with is get out of debt. So, folks, we'll see you next week. In the meantime, get out of debt. Thank you, Crash. And thanks always to Big Brains Media and our producer, JP. We'll see you next week.
To send an email to Janet or Crash, the address is feedback@justtalkingitup.com.